In deze podcast Martine Hogendoorn en Guimon de Graaf of the Institute for Medical Technology Assessment from the Erasmus University in Rotterdam will discuss the usefulness and necessity of economic evaluations of new treatments in healthcare. They will discuss briefly about all the relevance, the methodology, limitations, and the impact of economic evaluations in healthcare. Welcome to all. Thanks for your interest in economic evaluations. Also, welcome to my colleague, Guimon. Together, we will guide you through the basic principles of economic evaluations and cost-effectiveness research. Yeah, Guimon, I know that you know a lot about economic evaluations. I think the majority of our listeners are familiar with the idea that we should evaluate interventions in healthcare on their effectiveness. But can you explain to me why it's also relevant and maybe even necessary to also evaluate these interventions from an economic perspective?
Yes. In short, it's relevant because you can only spend a euro once. And this leads to something that economists call opportunity cost. And that's that if you spend your money on one thing, you can't spend it on something else. And the value that you would have obtained by spending it on that other thing, that's the opportunity cost. So one of the challenges that we face right now is that the healthcare costs continue to rise because of an aging population and because of new treatments coming to the market. And this makes it relevant to be able to determine this opportunity cost for healthcare.
Yes, indeed. I read recently that in the Netherlands in 2022, we spent 126 billion on care and welfare. And every year you see an increase in healthcare spending. Huh? So this year was more than the year before, but that's already a trend that's visible in the last years. So indeed, you see an increase in healthcare costs each year.
Yeah, and we see also a lot of attempts to slow or stop that growth in healthcare costs. And I think that's relevant because if you have a cap on your healthcare budget or you have a limited growth agreement like we have in the Netherlands, it means that if you introduce a new treatment into your insured package, that something else must go. That money is, you know, has to be coming from somewhere else within the insured package. And this is what we call displacement. You introduce something new, something else has to go. And ultimately, you want to create as much health as possible from the available budget. So you want to know that the new thing you introduce in your healthcare system is producing more health for the money that it consumes as compared to whatever is not being done anymore. And this is exactly the kind of insight that health economic evaluation gives you.
Yeah, so the aim is mainly to create as many health effects as possible with the budget that's available. Can you explain how you can assess exactly how much health something adds or how much health disappears with a certain new treatment or a new intervention?
Yeah. So then we have to just quickly go over how economic evaluations in healthcare work. I think the most important basic principle is that economic evaluations are always incremental evaluations, right? So it means that you are comparing two or more interchangeable treatments, meaning treatments that you could give the same patient population. And this means that you, in principle, you can never say treatment X is cost effective. You can only say treatment X compared to treatment Y is cost effective or not. And of course, usually when you, for example, evaluate a new drug, you will compare it to the existing care given to that same patient population as a comparison. So you can say this new drug is cost effective or not compared to the current care for that patient group.
Yeah, so economic evaluations then always compare two treatment options, huh? One new treatment versus standard of care or two different treatments.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you see that also in the, let's say, the most important outcome measure of economic evaluations, which is the incremental cost effectiveness ratio, right? So it already says it in that term, it's the incremental costs of a new treatment compared to something else divided by the incremental effects of the two treatments you evaluate. So this results then in a cost per unit of effect as the main outcome of a cost effectiveness analysis.
Yeah, so you often see then that the effects are expressed in quality adjusted life years or so-called QALYs. Yeah, so that's the main outcome.
It can be, but it doesn't have to be that way. There are actually, let's say, four basic types of economic evaluations, and they differ with respect to how they represent health effects or health outcomes. So the first option is actually cost minimization studies where you don't include any health effects. You only look at cost. So these studies are only relevant or applicable when you have good evidence that two options are basically equal in terms of health outcomes. So therefore you only look at the costs and you favor the one which has the least amount of costs. Then you have, for example, cost effectiveness studies where the health outcomes are defined on some, let's say, quantifiable clinical outputs, such as, let's say, a reduction in HbA1c or number of days in hospital or survival. So it's a measurable effect of health outcomes. That's a cost effectiveness study.
Yeah, so in these studies, then the main outcome is the cost effectiveness ratio, so expressed as cost per prevented hospitalization or hospitalization avoided, or cost per life year gained, or these kind of outcomes. So, but that can be really different, huh?
Yes, so indeed, these can be different depending on what type of intervention you are assessing. And that's why we have a third option called the cost utility analysis. And there, the outcomes are expressed in what you already mentioned, the quality adjusted life year. And the quality adjusted life year is a measure that combines quality of life and length of life. And we kind of say we can capture all relevant health outcomes in these two measures, quality and length of life. And the benefit of this is that you can basically use that in all kinds of disease areas, right? It's not specific for a single disease, and that enables also comparison for these between these disease areas.
Yeah.
So I almost forgot. You also have a fourth one already mentioned, and the fourth and last type is the cost benefit analysis, and there actually the health benefits are also expressed in monetary terms, so in euros or something else. So you basically have just one outcome measure being the incremental cost value.
Yeah. So, but what I see in daily life and in practice is that the cost utility type of economic evaluation is most often used. Can you explain why that is?
Yes, I think in the Netherlands and also other European countries, that option is most commonly used because it's preferred by the policymakers. And the reason why they prefer it is what I mentioned, is that you can compare these outcomes over all types of disease areas. What we started with, these decision makers are trying to use the available funds in the healthcare budget in such a way that you create the most health outcomes possible. And therefore you have to look over the entire healthcare system over all disease areas. So you need to be able to compare interventions between different disease areas, and you need an outcome measure that is universal, and the quality is that. So that's the reason why most often QALYs are used as the outcome measure. I do have to say, I mentioned that it's called a cost utility analysis if you use QALYs as the outcome measure. In, let's say, normal parlance, it's often still called a cost effectiveness analysis. This distinction between cost effectiveness and cost utility is not always being made everywhere. So just something to be aware of.
Yeah, so we discussed now briefly the effect side. So it's either expressed in clinical outcomes or in the QALYs. Can you discuss a little bit further on the cost side? How are costs expressed? Which costs are included?
Yeah, so the convenient thing about the cost side is that everything is just expressed in euros or another currency. But still, there are indeed different kinds of cost incorporated in that cost figure. So I think most obvious, first of all, you have the cost of treatment, the treatment that you're evaluating, and related things like hospitalization or treatment for complications. Those are, I think, the most obvious costs to include. But in economic evaluations, we tend to look a bit broader than that. For example, we also include costs that are incurred by patients themselves.
Yeah, so what kind of costs should I think about then? Costs that are for patients, that have patients, are yeah, for you, the you patients can, themselves.
You can think of costs, out-of-pocket costs. Some things you are not covered by insurance. Patients have to pay for that themselves. But you can also think of, let's say, the costs to travel to and from a checkup in a hospital. So just, parking and gasoline costs. So those have to be paid by patient themselves, and they can be relevant if the two alternatives differ on that aspect. But it's much broader than that in economic evaluations. We can also look at, for example, informal care, which is something that's not really paid for, but it's a cost for family and friends of a patient that they invest in the form of time. But in economic evaluations, you actually put a price tag on that time. And then, for example, we also have productivity losses. So sometimes a treatment or the illness of a patient can prevent them from performing paid work. And different treatments can also differ in this outcome. So we want to include that, the effects of illness and treatment on productivity. And finally, we also include, for example, the medical cost in increased years of life.
Yeah, can you explain a little bit further why that is relevant? Because I think to a lot of people that sounds strange. Yeah? If you have a new treatment that resulted in patients living longer, that's something good. And why should that be associated with an increase in cost?
Yeah, I understand that it feels a bit like you're giving a penalty to treatments that increase life expectancy. But the aim of a cost effectiveness or economic evaluation is to capture all relevant costs and benefits over the entire lifespan of a patient. So if you include the benefits of those increased years of life, then you should also include the costs of those increased years of life. And the thing is that, let's say, for example, you extend someone's life by immediately preventing a myocardial infarction or relieving a myocardial infarction, and this person does not die but lives for another 20, 30 years. Then you also take into account the quality of life this person that this person has. But this quality of life is not only the result of this single, resolving the myocardial infarction, but is a result of all the medical treatments, etc., that this person will receive over his or her remaining life. So, and if we take into account those health benefits, then we also need to take into account those costs to be able to have a balanced comparison.
Yeah, thanks for the explanation. So we discussed now briefly the effect side, the cost side, but from a practical standpoint, how do you do an economic evaluation?
Yeah, theoretically, you could do everything in one large study, right? Similar to a phase 3 clinical trial to assess efficacy, you could also do such a study and try to estimate all the input you need for this economic evaluation. Although, yeah, in practice, it's often not feasible because A, you have to gather a lot of data, different types of costs, which we discussed, the health effects, etc. And on the other side, you also want to monitor this over a very long period of time to get a complete picture of the costs and effects. So this is in practice usually not really a feasible solution.
Yeah, especially because what we just heard from you is that the main outcomes are the combination of life expectancy and quality of life. So that would mean that you actually need to follow patients till their end of life?
Yes. Yeah, to get the complete picture, you would need to follow everyone until end of life to be able to make a full cost effectiveness analysis. But yeah, as I said, that's of course not feasible. So in practice, you see that most economic evaluations are based on computational models. And this provides a few benefits. First of all, you can synthesize evidence coming from different sources. So you can take, for example, effectiveness from a clinical trial and use costing data from another study, or let's say life table data to say something about long-term survival. You could combine all those sources of information into one model and into the same evaluation. And that's also the second thing, you can extrapolate that over time. So even if you have, for example, mortality coming from a trial, and that trial only has a follow-up of a year, you can extrapolate that mortality in the long run with these mathematical models.
So we have now discussed that you have the effects and the cost. You can either obtain that from a trial or from a mathematical model. So the main result is the cost-effectiveness ratio. Yeah. How is that cost-effectiveness ratio then used in decision-making?
Yeah, that depends on who the decision maker is, I would say. It's indeed correct that the purpose of these economic evaluations is to provide insight for decision making. And therefore, it's also the decision maker who dictates what perspective is used in the economic evaluation.
Yeah. What do you exactly mean with perspective? What kind of perspectives are we talking about?
Yeah, so the perspective refers to, let's say, the viewpoint of the decision maker on the decision problem. So it means which costs and health outcomes are considered relevant for the decision at hand. So for example, in the Netherlands, the main decision maker is of course the Minister of Health, who makes the final decision on whether treatments belong in the insured package or not. And this decision is made based on advice from the healthcare institute. And for this reason, most economic evaluations in the Netherlands are done from a societal perspective, right? Because it's a decision of what to do with the healthcare funds that we all put together as a society. So you want to take into account all effects and costs, also things like productivity, which I talked about, because those are all relevant if you use the societal perspective. So that's kind of the broadest possible perspective where you include everything, but you could have a different decision maker. For example, at a hospital level, right? The hospital manager or maybe an insurance company, they can have a different perspective where some of these things are actually not relevant to the decision at hand, right? Maybe an insurance company is actually not so much interested in productivity effects in the long run, or a hospital is less interested in informal care, for example. So this perspective dictates what must be included in the economic evaluation.
Yeah, so the cost-effectiveness ratio can be based on different perspectives and can be used by different stakeholders. How are the results of this ratio actually used?
Yeah, good question, because the incremental cost-effectiveness ratio itself doesn't say anything about whether an intervention is cost-effective or not, right? It just says how much health benefits do you get for a certain amount of money that you need to spend on it. So to make a decision on whether it is cost-effective or not, you need to compare it to something. And ideally, you would want to compare it to, let's say, the health that is being displaced out of the system if you introduce a new thing. The problem is that is often not possible to do, because it's hard to pinpoint exactly what is being displaced if you introduce a new treatment into the system. So what is done alternatively is to compare it to, let's say, a reference value, a threshold, where we say, okay, If it's above a threshold value, we consider it cost effective, or if it's below the threshold, sorry, if it's below a threshold value, we consider it cost effective. If it's above the threshold value, we consider it not cost effective.
Yeah, who was kind of determining this threshold value?
Yeah, the decision maker determines the threshold value, and there are different ways of defining the threshold. So one way of defining the threshold would be to say, okay, what's the average efficiency of the healthcare system in producing health? And then, yeah, if your new treatment is more efficient, you would want to incorporate it. Another way of defining the threshold is to say, okay, what are we as a society willing to pay for additional health? And that is actually the threshold that we use in the Netherlands. Actually, here we have a number of thresholds based on disease severity. So depending on how severe we consider a certain disease, we say we have a different willingness to pay. Huh? We are willing to pay more for health in a disease area which we consider having a very high burden of disease. So, for example, in the Netherlands, the threshold for the highest disease burden category is €80,000 per quality. So you can compare your incremental cost effectiveness ratio, the result of your economic evaluation, you compare it to this threshold and say, okay, if this new treatment in my economic evaluation has an incremental cost effectiveness ratio below this €80,000 per quality, in this case, Zorginstituut would consider it cost effective and would advise the minister to include it in the insured package.
Yeah, so we learned how how the ICER can be used and can be interpreted, mainly for the Ministry of Health or a healthcare insurer. Is there also an added value for individual clinicians or specialists like treating patients?
Yeah, I think that's it. The results of these economic evaluations are very difficult to use on an individual patient level in clinical decision making. I think mainly because they are population level analyses, so it's hard to translate to an individual. And I think it's difficult to interpret the cost aspect if you're dealing with, let's say, an individual patient decision making. But I think it's very relevant for clinicians to be aware of this displacement effect that we talked about, right? So if you as a clinician or a group of clinicians are advocating for a new treatment to be included in the reimbursed package, regardless of the price that the treatment has, then it's good to realize that this may lead to displacement of care that's actually producing more health benefits than the new treatment you're advocating for, right? So I think it's good to be aware of that, but that the place to use the result of economic evaluations is more in the formulation of guidelines, right? Because guidelines always give advice on, let's say, a population level, and that's the task of physicians to translate the advice from the guideline to individual decision making. So I think that's the place where it should be used. And you do see this. There's an increasing use of information on cost and cost effectiveness in the formulation of guidelines. And I think that's, yeah, it's a trend that's going to continue, and that it's also a good development, because I think it's not solely the task of the minister and the healthcare institute to ensure the financial sustainability of the healthcare system, right? I think that clinical or medical professionals can also play a role in that.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the information of economic evaluations can be quite relevant, for reimbursement decisions or for guidelines development. Can you also discuss a little bit the limitations of economic evaluations?
Yeah, I think one of the main limitations is that an economic evaluation, especially if you do it from the societal perspective, it needs a lot of data, right? All these different cost aspects, health outcomes, you need to have data on it, and you don't always have good quality data at your disposal. Let's say effect outcomes are often, you have decent data available, outcomes from phase three clinical trials, for example, but impact on, for example, the productivity losses or informal care, which you discussed about, is often not available for this let's say, a specific treatment, a specific disease at hand. So then you rely on more general information on these outcomes, which, let's say, yeah, it's a limitation on the outcomes that you have as a result.
Yeah. So and how can you give decision makers insight in what the impact of this uncertainty is around certain assumptions or inputs?
Yeah, so indeed, a lot of assumptions need to be made quite often, right? If you don't have good data, you sometimes have to make assumptions. These assumptions, by the way, are most often made by clinical experts, right? It's not that the economic modelers are doing those assumptions. We interview clinical experts to get their insight and use their knowledge to make these assumptions. But indeed, there's always uncertainty involved when you use assumptions. And one of the good things, especially if you use these models, which I talked about, is that you can, let's say, assess the impact of this uncertainty by putting different input parameters into the model. So if you're uncertain about a certain value, instead of just evaluating the model with that, your main guess for that value, you can evaluate the model many times with a whole range of values, and you can assess whether this uncertainty actually has an impact on the outcomes. Quite often you see that it doesn't really matter what the value is anyways, because the outcome will be the same. Or if it does have an impact, you can say, okay, if it is below or above a certain threshold, it becomes a relevant factor. So yeah, it can be a target for future research to resolve that uncertainty. And there's also uncertainty, I would say, that's less easy to assess. What I just talked about is uncertainty in the input values, where you can vary this input and see what the effect is. That's relatively easy to do, but you also have uncertainty in, for example, the model structure, right? The model represents a disease progression, a natural progression of disease, or a clinical process. You have to capture that in the model. And you also have to make different decisions on how to do that. And there's uncertainty in that. But this uncertainty is a lot more difficult to actually quantify and assess, the structural uncertainty, we call it. And also some things are more difficult to incorporate. For example, learning effects. If you have a new surgical intervention, that over time, as surgeons will perform this procedure, they will get better at it, maybe faster, more precise. But these things you often do not know, and they're quite difficult to incorporate in these analyses. So those are limitations that we have to deal with. And you have to be aware when you interpret the results that these are limitations that we have.
Yeah. So one final question. How do you think that the field of economic evaluations will change in the near future? Do you see any major changes coming up?
Yeah, I think like any field, the field of economic evaluations is changing as a result of artificial intelligence. It's difficult to see right now exactly what kind of impact it will have, but I think first of all, the things that we still see quite soon is that it will change the way we do literature reviews, the way we, let's say, collect all this information that we need in evaluations. That will change using AI. Also, maybe developing and programming these models will change with the introduction of artificial intelligence. Another thing that we see is a movement towards the use of disease models rather than specific models for a certain intervention, right? What we see now is if manufacturers apply for reimbursement, they develop a model for the specific disease and a specific treatment they request reimbursement for. And we see a move towards more, larger and general disease models, which can assess all types of interventions and treatments for a specific disease area. And these models are often developed and managed by an authority like the Healthcare Institute in Netherlands. And I think a benefit is that it creates kind of a level playing field whereby all sorts of interventions from different manufacturers are assessed in the same model using the same reference values, right? So it's not that an individual producer can kind of tweak their model to gain certain favorable outcomes in their situation. So that's a trend we see. And I think lastly, there's a trend towards more European cooperation in the field of health technology assessment, which is of course broader than only health economic evaluation. But we see that authorities all over Europe are kind of harmonizing their procedures for economic evaluation, or for market access and reimbursement procedures are being harmonized, and information is being shared. So it should become, let's say, more easy to gain access to different European markets because the differences become less between European countries.
Yeah, now seems indeed a good idea to do more collaboration within Europe. Although that would be probably still be difficult for the cost part, because costs are quite different for different countries.
Yes, exactly. The health effect side is more universal. It's more directly, usually directly related to, let's say, the treatment itself. Indeed, cost effects in terms of productivity differ a lot per country. So that part will always be country specific. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Iman, for your clear explanation today about what economic evaluations are and what and how they are used. Thank you also to our listeners. We hope that this podcast contributed to your knowledge on economic evaluations.
If you would like to know more about economic evaluations in healthcare, please sign up for the online HEOR course on our website. This podcast has been recorded with financial support from EPFI. The sponsor had no role in the design and content of this podcast.